Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
You know, it was a big weekend for many events. We'd like to do something a little differently today. Instead of having one item that we expand on and try to dissect it out, we have several. There's so much news going on.
Yeah.
And we didn't pick one that was the super item. So we'll try to go over several news items. And I thought maybe we could start off with letting the audience know a little bit about our weekend, because we had a busy weekend. At least I felt busy.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, well, we were in Lake Jackson. We had a big conference, the Mises Institute. Our good friends Lou Rockwell and Jeff Deist brought the show on the road. They came down. They sold out the Dow Academic Center at the local college. I think it was over 350 people, Dr. Paul. In fact, some people were standing room only. They were, you know, paying to get in when they got there. Talking about propaganda, the coming election, war propaganda. Dr. Paul did a show with Tom Woods, and that was a blast. And then he gave a speech, and I gave a talk on war propaganda. But it was a great time. Incidentally, the night before, we had a wonderful time actually at Dr. Paul's house for our annual supporters summit for our top supporters of the Ron Paul Institute. And we thank them very much. They're the ones that make this possible. And all of you that help contribute make this possible. So we're grateful to that. But what a great weekend it was, you know.
Well,
it was really
fun. It was
fun.
Good, and looking back now, I had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
There were a few times I had to be busy. I thought, when am I going to get my bicycle ride in?
Exactly.
I have to confess. No, I do want to bring up the subject of what day this is, because we've talked about this in the past, and it for libertarians, it's a controversial day, and that is Veterans Day.
Mm-hmm.
He calls it Veterans Day, but it's really Armistice Day, you know, the celebration of the war to end all wars, and that was in 1919 to end World War I. But they don't call it, Armistice Day. And I think it's not an accident. You know, essentially, the name was changed under Eisenhower in 1954 after we just didn't win a war. And to me, it's almost like a distraction. How can you continue to celebrate the end, ending all these wars, but the wars don't end? What we've ended is going to war in a proper manner, and this is a thing that, you know, bothers a lot, and a lot of people point out, about how Armistice Day or the Veterans Day is celebrated. It's a militaristic day. It's celebrating military, and really, I think it's to glorify the military. I think it's a neocon plot.
Yeah,
because if you or I object, we might be criticized. Hey, you guys just aren't patriotic. But we were very patriotic when we think about and have an armistice that is celebrating the end of a war and the end of other wars. It's too bad we don't have a honest-to-goodness Armistice Day. And maybe that is, in a way, that's what we're working for, is trying to get one of those days where we end these unnecessary wars. But they're continuous, and they're ongoing.
Yeah, you know, I remember back, I think it was 2002 or 2003, I was working for you on the Hill, and I took my little boy, was a little boy in a stroller back then, and we went to Arlington Cemetery on the 11th, on Veterans Day, and it was it's very somber to walk through the graves on the day like that. And just by accident, we happened upon a stadium there, a little, you know, there's a venue there, and there was a lot of excitement, so we said, oh, there's a line, so we stood in the line, you know, being good. And it turns out that it was George W. Bush was going to go give a talk. So we went in there, and after feeling the somber feeling about the graves, and he came out and rah, rah, war, war, you know, this whole thing. So, in fact, in just a few minutes, it'll be 11-11, the 11th hour, the 11th day, the 11th month, when World War I stopped, ended. You know, the war to end all wars, and it's a somber time. You know, over the weekend we started out with this. I was talking to an Afghan combat war vet, and it was tragic. Really nice guy. He was definitely on our side now, but he talked a little bit about the drugs they gave him to deal with his PTSD after a couple of tours of combat in Afghanistan. Mm. He's just now really getting his life back together. But he had years of mental anguish and agony fueled by this cocktail of constant drugs, handfuls of drugs. And that's the kind of thing that people don't want you to see on a day like this.
That's right. And there is a trademark for identifying yourself as a patriot. And that is when you see somebody with the military, thank you for your service.
Yeah.
I am a veteran, so I'm on the receiving end of that sometimes. But, of course, it makes me very uncomfortable because although I was drafted, I went in, I didn't volunteer for the service, and I did the job the best I could in taking care of people. But the last thing I think I should be thanked for, I mean, is for my service. I didn't give service to the people. Yeah, but you saved freedom. You went and defended our Constitution. And as years went on, I realized that's not what we were doing. It's been a long time since we did that. As a matter of fact, maybe it's a couple hundred years since we were defending our freedoms. And yet it is constant. And I don't have a good answer because, you know, you don't want to take that on as a fight in public, but I usually just ignore it. But it's sort of ironic. I remember getting on to a type of a debate with the media, and he was taking the other position. It was probably when the Iraq War was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew I was a veteran. So he immediately had to start off by acknowledging the fact that I was a veteran and had to thank me for my services and that. And all that did was make me feel uncomfortable. I'd like, you know, in a way, what we need are less veterans of war. You know,
but
this is endless. You know, they're still being injured even though they're not reported. And this is going to, you know, be a financial burden, let alone a family burden of people. People, you know, who have lost limbs, that's what really does it. Of course, the loss of life is horrible, but to me, it's so tragic to see somebody, a quadriplegic, neither arms or legs, it was all unnecessary, and, this idea that contributing a service for this, this is supposed to make them feel better that, you know, that you really did something good, but I think the only good that can come from that when it's so tragic is admitting the circumstances, which some of our veteran friends do.
Yeah.
You know, they participated, they've been injured and everything, but they turn around and say it was a fraud, the war meant nothing, and then they join us in trying to prevent the next tragedy.
Yeah, and that's the silver lining, really. But speaking of war, endless war, warmongers, let's talk about Nikki Haley, right? With all due respect, is her tell-all memoir, right?
Oh,
and she had some bombshells over the weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, she's somebody to be feared if you happen to be libertarian-leaning.
Yeah.
But no, this is an interesting thing because she goes after two individuals, and that is Rex Tillerson and Kelly.
Yeah.
And her claim in this book is that they more or less approached her to try to incorporate her into a coup. Of course, it wasn't that. They claim that they wanted to save the country.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with insubordination, but they wanted to get her involved in this. And the fact that she's come out in this book at this particular time, when, you know, there's rumors about Pence and these different things and what's happening, everybody knew she was not finished when she left the United Nations. She was only starting. So it'll be interesting to see what happened. She's probably not in the worst position, you know, if Trump survives all this, that he would put a woman on. Even if she strongly disagrees his professed foreign policy.
Yeah.
You know, he's always in trouble because the neocons are in charge. So, but of course, Pence, neocon too. But he's had more to say recently than in the early years. But that I don't see how that could help her, help Trump just by putting her on the ticket.
Yeah. Well, this sadly enough, this really shows why the Trump presidency, despite what a lot of his supporters will say, has been a failure. This is a failure because he brought people like Tillerson, John Kelly, John Bolton, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He brought a steady stream of people into his administration that fundamentally disagree with what he said, unless he was lying the whole time, which is certainly possible. Fundamentally disagree with his stated foreign policy. They actively undermine. It wasn't just Chiarello and Vindman and all these guys. No, no. It was his top people that he chose who undermine him. And this is what Nikki Haley says in her book, that John Kelly and Tillerson said, we want to recruit you because we're resisting what the president tells us to do for the country, for the good of our country. I'll tell you, Dr. Paul, what Trump should do. And someone, this is not an original idea, someone else has said this about a different general. He should recall General Kelly to active duty and put him up on a court-martial, you know, for insubordination.
Why?
You know, take away his pension, take away, that would, you know, do a Truman with MacArthur.
Yeah, there you go. You know, other things are stirring up in the foreign policy. I want to talk about Syria, but before we go into Syria, there was a little story over the weekend about us threatening, can you believe it? We're threatening to put sanctions on a very, very dangerous country. We have to tell them where we stand. That's on Serbia.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a couple high school graduates probably can't quite find Serbia on the map.
Yeah, no kidding.
But we're threatening to punish the people of Serbia. And the reason is the Serbs have, I think they've had a tradition of actually getting along with Russians, you know. And so they've had Russian demonstration of their S-400, and they're hinting and toying with the idea that they'll buy the S-400, and that's bad for American businesses, and that's something Trump understands.
Yeah.
So he's threatened them with sanctions if they go ahead and do this. But and here we go to all extreme for a country which I think it's pretty certain that this is a defensive weapon. And, of course, we want to stir up trouble there. And what we'll talk about in Syria, actually, we're trying to do more offensive weapons in Syria.
Yeah. Clinton attacked Yugoslavia, attacked Serbia, based on a lie, as they always are. Killed thousands of innocent civilians, left a bunch of depleted uranium all over the country. The Serbs are still suffering from cancer and all of the things that happen when the U.S. liberates you. But no, they were looking to buy some Russian stuff. Most of their military is old Soviet and Russian equipment because it's a poor country. So the Trump administration is sending Thomas Zaretsky from the State Department's Bureau of International Security and Nonproliferation off to threaten them. You know, and we blew up your country a few decades ago, but if you dare buy a Russian S-400 to defend yourself, by golly, you are going to be in big trouble. This is a military-industrial complex.
Yes, and you know, the announcement is that we have started to send more military weapons to northeastern Syria.
Uh-huh.
And these are tanks and infantry. I would say that sounds offensive to me. Well, it should offend those individuals that we do this for, but this is the whole thing. We're still building up the military, and of course, the oil thing is involved, and it's into that area. And there was a threat there today, I think it was from the Pentagon. It made the announcement that U.S. government supposedly will shoot any Syrian who tries to take oil from the oil field. So if anybody from is related to Assad, they think that they have a right to this or take it, they've been told that they could be shot by the United States government. So that that doesn't quite sound like a libertarian foreign policy to me. And yet the weapons are being built, we're selling more weapons, and this is just more mischief.
Yeah, this is a big deal, I think, because the U.S. continues to occupy, and this is the announcement over the weekend by Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, that we're going to keep 500 to 600 troops in Syria. They're going to remain in Syria to prevent the reemergence of ISIS, which is a joke because the Syrian government and the Russians and the Iranians have been fighting ISIS now since 2015, at least their allies have, and destroyed it. But it's interesting when you think about ISIS and you think about the jihadists in Syria. Where are they? Where are they? And, you know, the Russians and the Syrian government gave a notice to the U.S. They said, hey, we need to attack some terrorists, and they're basically in your neighborhood. And here's what the CENTCOM spokesman said. The U.S., this is sort of putting a fine point on what you said. The U.S. does not seek to fight the Russians, but the U.S. will not hesitate to use necessary and proportionate force to defend the U.S. coalition or partner forces. So where are these jihadists that the U.S., that the Russians are trying to kill? We got a map here that's going to show you exactly where they are. You're going to be shocked, Dr. Paul, if you look down there to the lower right, Al-Tanf border crossing, that's where our base is. All that green all around it are jihadists. are extremists. And you can see there's another group up in Idlib that the U.S. is protecting. That's where we knocked out Baghdadi, if we believe the claims, the head of ISIS. So there's these two big concentrations. One of them just happens to be surrounding our military facilities there. So why the heck do they feel so safe around our base? You'd think they'd be terrified.
You know, they never quit using the same excuse. It's always ISIS and the terrorists. And if they don't have them, we'll guarantee that they'll be there after we get involved.
Yeah.
And that's what all this activity now is going. It's always ISIS. But, of course, Trump explained to them that ISIS is gone. They're not a threat. We can leave now. We're coming out. And yet all the justification is ISIS. So you get two messages. Sometimes it's Trump versus the Pentagon, and sometimes it's Trump versus Trump, and trying to figure out what to do. But, you know, this briefing that occurred just recently to talk about this issue, somebody from the Pentagon as well as from the Navy, they were talking about this, and they were the media asked a pretty good question. Where's your legal authority to do this and do all that? So pressed on by a reporter about the legal basis for the United States military to take and control the natural resources, and that's the oil, of course, inside the boundaries of another country, Hoffman, who was the spokesman for the Pentagon, said, the legal basis for this comes under the commander-in-chief's authority for us to be conducting counterterrorism efforts against ISIS. And I get your point of what you're trying to do to us. You're trying to decouple ISIS from the Syria issue, but it is not decouplable. You can't do it. Even if it makes sense, even though it's true and even though it's totally factual, it's nothing but... Could you say it's a lie? No, I can't.
They
I can't say
that
it's a lie, but certainly a lot of misinformation. If it's not a lie, it's based on a lot of misinformation and pure misunderstanding.
Yeah, they're stealing the oil. They're open about it. They're giving the money to the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, which is basically a group of Kurds and terrorists. You know, they were former terrorists. They were told by the U.S. There was actually a great clip from a general telling why they changed their name. They were told, you know, your previous name, I think it was Al-Qaeda. It's really not a good name. You know, we want to support you. So you got to rebrand yourself. And it literally is. I should find the quote and put it in the notes here. So they came up with Syrian Democratic Forces, and the Americans said, that sounds great. So these are the people that we're giving the oil from, the oil to there. We're stealing the oil from the country and giving it to these guys. So no, don't go on about ISIS, right?
And if a Syrian associated with Assad takes it, they say he's stealing it.
Yeah,
I mean, the assumption of ownership is clearly wrong and obvious, though, on the way they talk. What are we going to do with our oil? And, of course, Trump's position with this hasn't been totally hidden. Well, if we have to go in there, well, they have to pay for it. Yeah. We're going in there and do the dirty work. They have oil. We'll just get their oil and pay for it. It's not quite so neat. What they don't understand, and we've talked about it a lot, is they lose the upper hand by who's defending the homeland.
Yeah.
And we're not defending our homeland. And they're defending their homeland to a large degree or playing on that part. Certainly Assad represents a lot of people still. The places that he's recovered control of, they've done pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, and, and they're not out trying to kill him,
but
it's somebody else. But I think this is just an excuse to keep the anti-Assad policy alive. And, of course, he didn't even create it. That was created by Obama. You know, Assad has to go, and we've been doing that for almost a decade. So,
you know, this is the failure of Trump. Just like the Ukraine gate is people within Trump's administration trying to keep the anti-Russia stuff alive. So everyone everywhere is working against him, and he's sitting here pounding the table and screaming and not doing very much. Well, I'll close with just another hot spot to keep an eye on, and this is Bolivia. There's a U.S.-backed coup in Bolivia. The president has just resigned, even though by all stretch he was reelected. The Organization for American States is a non-governmental organization, basically like the UN that the U.S. controls. It's a puppet organization. They've been involved in the coup. You're going to see a lot of people celebrating. In fact, even some libertarians are celebrating this overthrow, this coup, this U.S.-backed coup. And this is what I talked about a little bit in my speech, and we'll put it up when it's available. But guess what? This is not going to usher in a libertarian Bolivia. It never does. So yay, 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 People are in the street. It's a great revolution. No, it's not the case. It's just another dumb U.S. intervention. People in Bolivia are going to be a lot worse off in the future. Not to say that Morales, the socialist, is a great guy, but usually what comes after is a lot worse. Dr. Paul?
Well, I'm all for revolution, but not a military revolution. They're based on fraud and money-making and war is a racket, that sort of thing. But intellectual revolution is really what we need, and that's why I think we met a lot of people, once again, this weekend, that understand this clearly, that they deal in ideas, and the Mises Institute has been doing that for years. We've been doing it for not quite so long, but we try to change people's minds, and it's delightful because I met quite a few over the weekend that were military people, and they changed their minds on it. It's not like they won't change their minds. They will if they hear something else. Some change their minds when they see the stupidity of the interventions. And I still sometimes get a little bit surprised that we didn't feel like we were that far along in the presidential campaigns, but we still came out, you know, with the strongest support of military people, you know, and I took this position. So this whole nonsense that military people are always pro-war, the logic is why would they be pro-war? So we met people like that that did change your mind. That always encourages me that people are able to think it through. And sometimes people do change their mind, but they don't have a revolutionary understanding, an intellectual revolution, because the American people finally changed their mind on Vietnam. But it was more just out of a utilitarian, practical reason. It was so stupid and so much death and destruction and cost that finally they had to throw the towel in and give up on this. I'd like to get our position in a lot sooner and not have to wait for 10 years. Right now we keep saying, oh, well, when are we going to end the war in Afghanistan? You think they'd be running out of time. But no, it's still going on and they're still waiting. And I mentioned, you know, Serbia here we're starting sanctions on Serbia. Last thing we need to be doing is looking for another fight someplace else. But we have to start. If we're going to understand this philosophy with a principle, and that is non-intervention, that we don't have the moral authority, we don't have the capability, we don't have the money, and it's not very practical. And if we want to influence the world in a positive way and influence the world to how to achieve peace and prosperity, that is philosophic. And the most we can do is set an example. So we have our hands full. I do not see any purpose of us pretending. Even if you get a hint that one of these guys are a little bit better than the other, it just doesn't work. It just sort of messes things up, and we don't have this authority to do it. But we do have the responsibility if we want to be Americans, and now that we think about the tragedies of all the war and what armistice day should mean, that we should try to correct those problems and try to teach people, you know, what it's like and not be so frightened. People think, oh, that would be horrible. The Russians and the Chinese would be on our doorstep. No, if there was anything, maybe they would become competitors and start nibbling away at each other. But no, that is not going to happen. And this idea that you have to see direct, intervention where they're committing aggression to us is something that is necessary if we're ever going to take up arms. But in my lifetime, at least since World War II, has been no reason for that. So the philosophy is clear. Non-interventionism is an American idea. It's compatible with the Constitution, and I believe it's compatible with a majority of the American people. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.